Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 733, WikiLeaks Soup, The Roving Reporter, subtitled A Night in Tunisia. This program is being recorded on January 16th of the year 2011. We're just going to plunge right back in where we left off on Side 1. The WikiLeaks Soup refers, of course, to WikiLeaks and the fact that this phenomenon is a complex one with all sorts of organizations from the right and the left and intelligence services involved in this particular bouillabaisse, so to speak, and mixing my culinary metaphors. We're going to be delving into and sort of running a spoon through the WikiLeaks soup and taking a look at some of the many elements that are involved. Again, I still have many, many unresolved questions about WikiLeaks. However, I think that some of the general primary considerations and the general vector of what it is that they're doing are beginning to become clear. We're going to plunge right in with what is the element that inspired the part of the title of this broadcast. One school of thought about WikiLeaks is that it's an Obama administration, quote, conspiracy, unquote, or intelligence operation in order to provoke a crackdown on internet freedom and promote cybersecurity. Certainly the Obama administration has been promoting cybersecurity, but I do not think that the Obama administration is the beneficiary of WikiLeaks. Far from it. WikiLeaks is going to do a lot of damage to the Obama administration and is going to hinder it, not help it. When I was young and the Vietnam War was underway, I remember seeing an article that was published in Newsweek, or perhaps Time, one of the glossy news mags of the time. And this was in early 69, maybe the spring of 1969, right after Richard Nixon had assumed office. And a Nixon administration official was quoted about the anti-Vietnam War demonstrations that were taking place, saying, "There's only one establishment at a time, and we're it," unquote. I think that applies to the Obama administration. And one of the striking things about the leaks that have come out, first of all, most of the leaks really haven't been all that remarkable. They are either things that were already known to an extent or that could be reasonably extrapolated. But, for example, most of the State Department cables that have been leaked from the Clinton or the Hillary Clinton State Department, the Obama State Department, not George W. Bush. And although many of the disclosures are anything but revelatory, having confidential diplomatic communications basically leaked, having their business put in the street, is certainly going to make it much more difficult for the U.S. to conduct foreign policy. Having set relations or an improvement in relations with Russia as a priority, the Obama administration has already seen relations with Russia frayed to an extent by the WikiLeaks disclosures. It is a very good bet that diplomacy with the Arabs is not going to be enhanced very much by having our diplomatic situation, basically our diplomatic business put in the street, so to speak. Similar with regard to China. The success of the Obama administration is going to be greatly hindered vis-a-vis foreign policy and, for example, with regard to relations to Saudi Arabia and China. Those also have profound implications for the economy as well. This is going to be very destructive to the Obama administration, and ultimately, if some of the things such as the leaking of facilities that are absolutely essential to U.S. security and which must be prevented or must be guarded against terrorist attack, and the leaking of information about the Social Security numbers of active duty American military personnel, this could ultimately result in a major terrorist incident. That would weaken the Obama administration, make them look soft on terror or incompetent. And in general, this is something that is not benefiting the Obama administration at all. And in particular, I was struck by the fact that all of the State Department leaks that I've seen appear to have come, been leaks basically about the Hillary Clinton-supervised Obama State Department. One of the things I wondered in connection with that was whether perhaps our discussions with John Loftus about there being basically two intelligence systems, one associated with the Democrats and one associated with the Republicans and the transnational corporations and, by extension, the underground Reich. I am wondering to what extent the Republican/Bush State Department and intelligence community may be leaking some of this information to WikiLeaks in order to destabilize the Obama administration. It now turns out that somebody who has been in Sweden, where, of course, WikiLeaks has been greatly assisted by the pirate vortex, at the center of which lies Nazi financier Carl Lundstrom, who turns out to be operating and holding forth in Sweden at this time, none other than George Bush's right-hand man, Karl Rove, the roving reporter. From, among other blogs, the Swedish Wire, we find the following. This is from the 12th of January of 2011. Karl Rove, behind Sweden's hunt for Assange. Like many of the articles, this sort of has a, you know, U.S. as the villain in this whole thing, and Karl Rove as part of the great Satan. I think this is a very important article, but I think one needs to read between the lines and to see Rove here not as someone that's helping to lower the hammer on Julian Assange. I think actually the attempts at reining in Assange have been very heavy-handed and have actually served as a PR black eye for the United States. Playing whack-a-mole with a guy like Assange has only turned him into a martyr. I think a much better way of neutralizing the damage that he's done is to show him for exactly what he is and show WikiLeaks for what it is, too, which is a Nazi-based, at the core, multi-agency intelligence operation involving some really interesting elements, including quite possibly at some level Russian internet criminals. We're going to take a look at that later on. But again, who turns out to be holding forth in Sweden at this time? Who turns out to be very close to the current prime minister of Sweden, known as the Ronald Reagan of Europe? Karl Rove. From the Swedish Wire of January 12th of 2001, Karl Rove behind Sweden's hunt for Assange. Former Bush White House strategist Karl Rove may be a leading role, may be playing a leading role in the try to prosecute WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, according to sources for several legal experts. Karl Rove was a senior advisor to former U.S. President George W. Bush. He is also advisor to Sweden's Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt. Several legal experts now suggest that Karl Rove is likely to be involved in advising the Swedish government how Julian Assange can be extradited to the U.S. via the Scandinavian country. This has Karl's signature, a reliable political source told the Huffington Post. He, Rove, must be very happy. He's right back in the middle of it, making himself valuable to his new friends, seeing the U.S. government doing just what he'd like and screwing his opponents big time, unquote. British lawyers of Assange, who has enraged the United States by leaking U.S. diplomatic cables and embarrassed world leaders, says there is a, quote, real risk that if extradited to Sweden, Assange may be sent on to the United States, where he could be detained at Guantanamo Bay or even face the death penalty. U.S. federal prosecutors seeking to build a case against the WikiLeaks leader Julian Assange for his role in a huge dissemination of classified government documents are looking for evidence of any collusion in his early contacts with an Army intelligence analyst suspected of leaking the information, according to the New York Times. Fredrik Reinfeldt has been called the Ronald Reagan of Europe, website Legal Schnauzer said. He has a friendship with Karl Rove that dates back at least 10 years to the George W. Bush campaign for president in 2000. Fredrik Reinfeldt reportedly asked Rove to help with his 2010 re-election in Sweden. According to the website Dagens Opinion, Karl Rove visited Sweden last December. So Karl Rove apparently an advisor to the current prime minister of Sweden, speculating there is a line of speculation that he's helping to prosecute Julian Assange. Well, that may be. It may also be one of the reasons why the attempts at stifling Assange are so clumsy. But, again, I think with Karl Rove's name cropping up here, just exactly what he's doing, is he really working to prosecute Julian Assange, or is he helping to manipulate the WikiLeaks phenomenon, at the core of which, again, it's highly complex. There appear to be input from a variety of intelligence services, as we looked at in For the Record 725, WikiSpooks and the World of Stieg Larsson. But again, at the core of WikiLeaks is anything but a progressive organization. But basically, it's a Nazi milieu utilizing a lot of people who are not only not aware of what's going on, but who would be ideologically opposed to that if they were. But Karl Rove, very close to the current Prime Minister of Sweden. And Karl Rove, by the way, as we've looked at in some of our discussions of him, not only someone whose political pedigree dates back to the dirty tricks that were implemented by the Nixon White House and the GOP under the elder George Bush, but Karl Rove's father was a corporate geologist for Getty Oil. And by that, I don't mean that he was going around taking core samples. He was working in the Getty corporate headquarters. J. Paul Getty was a personal friend of Adolf Hitler. He also shipped Mexican oil to the Nazis. And he is very close to the milieu of Otto von Bolschwing, the SS official whose protege Helena von Damm helped to staff the Republican Party. There are also very strong links between the Getty milieu and some of the San Francisco political milieu grouped around Gavin Newsom. His father, Bill Newsom, was the attorney for J. Paul Getty and works very closely with Getty's son, Gordon Getty. Again, Karl Rove worked. His father was a corporate geologist with Getty Oil. Rove himself, a very interesting individual. There are also very strong links, as we've seen in past discussions of Eurofascism, between the Swedish power elite and the forces that were allied with Nazi Germany in World War II. Many prominent Swedish industrialists and financiers, although the country was nominally neutral, supported Hitler, and many Swedes volunteered for service in the Waffen-SS. I would note, too, that again, the net thrust of the WikiLeaks disclosures is not going to help Obama, but it's going to hurt Obama. A very fascinating detail concerns the fact there's just been a revolution of sorts in Tunisia, the government of which was certainly extremely repressive. The fact that it was repressive was the focal point of some of the leaks that took place of State Department documents, and there were also some State Department documents from the Bush administration era that talked about the fellow Mohamed Ghannouchi as a very positive successor to Mr. Ben Ali. And whether or not WikiLeaks, this is the first WikiLeaks coup, it certainly is interesting. Article from The Guardian by Ian Black, Tunisia, the WikiLeaks connection, and it reads, the man now president, Mohamed Ghannouchi, was profiled in January of 2006 in a secret U.S. cable recently released by WikiLeaks. A technocrat and economist, Ghannouchi has served as prime minister since 1999. He is rumored to have told many he wishes to leave the government but has not had the opportunity. The length of his service as prime minister also suggests that Ben Ali does not view him as a threat and he is unlikely to be viewed as a qualified successor. However, average Tunisians generally view him with respect, and he is well-liked in comparison to other GOT and RCD ruling party officials. Then U.S. Ambassador William Hudson said, quote, given the fact that Ben Ali has a dictatorial hold, it is hard to believe he'll voluntarily step down, unquote. Even so, the mere fact that an increasing number of Tunisians are talking about the end of the Ben Ali era is remarkable, unquote. Publication of WikiLeaks sourced private U.S. comments on the corruption and nepotism of a hated sclerotic regime is said to have helped create Tunisia's protest and generated talk by U.S. commentators of a WikiLeaks revolution. Certainly, it does not sound like the Ben Ali regime is one to have been mourned. However, it remains to be seen just exactly what happens when the pinballs stop ricocheting around the Tunisian game board, who winds up benefiting. A few articles that should be considered in connection with this. And we're going to take a look at a January 16th, 2011 article from Yahoo News about the Tunisia protest. The full URL will be in the description for the program. Listen to who turned up in Tunisia at the time of the protests, of the perhaps first WikiLeaks revolution. Police said they had caught two men with Swedish passports after one of the shooting incidents, and state television quoted a security source as saying four people carrying German passports had been detained in the same incident. It showed what it said were the detained foreigners with blonde hair and fair complexions being guarded by armed police and said the arms they were carrying included automatic weapons. However, the Swedish news agency TT said the men were part of a Swedish group visiting Tunisia to hunt wild boar who had been attacked by a mob. A couple of points of information, more rumination about the dictatorial nature, the repressive nature of the Ben Ali regime, and how it should be removed, perhaps. The Bertelsmann Corporation's Transformation Index talks about how difficult Bertelsmann is, of course, the German corporation descended from the SS publisher that has taken control of English language publishing for all intents and purposes, certainly in the United States, and it is the largest single English language publisher. The Bertelsmann Transformation Index about Tunisia, considering the moderate level of difficulty in carrying out reforms and taking into account the government's ambitious development objectives, of Tunisia's decision makers have once again advanced transformation too sluggishly. Well, too sluggishly for whom? Certainly for, among others, Elliot Abrams, writing for the Council on Foreign Relations website, Tunisia is not a very important country, but the fall of its 23-year-old dictatorship could nevertheless be significant. Day after day of demonstrations at the end of 2010 proved able for the first time to defy the security forces. President Ben Ali removed the governor of the relevant province and blamed his own ministers, and in a TV speech denounced the demonstrators, but he has no answers to the demands for freedom and prosperity. His police state control of the streets and the communication media is failing. So again, Elliot Abrams, among others, those who are noting how nice it would be if Mr. Ali left. And again, this is not to constitute an endorsement of Mr. Ben Ali. He certainly appears to be a bad one, but it remains to be seen what happens after all of the pinballs have stopped ricocheting around the Tunisian game board. Note the people with Swedish passports and German passports and weapons and blonde hair and blue eyes who appear to have been involved in some of the shooting incidents that precipitated this. Where is that at? Where were they from? Buddies of Carl Lundstrom, perhaps? Again, as is in the case with so many of the aspects of this WikiLeaks story, I have more questions than answers. I would also note in passing that in some of Julian Assange's own emails to John Young, originally one of the founders of WikiLeaks, later turned one of its most effective critics, he noted that Chinese dissidents and expatriates were among the founders of WikiLeaks, and it has, among other things, an anti-Chinese stance. I would note the following from the allafrica.com website. Among the countries that was developing a relationship with the now overthrown or replaced Tunisian government was China. On this occasion, Mr. Kamel Morjane stressed Tunisia's strong commitment, as instructed by President Ben Ali, to foster the long-standing ties of friendship between the Tunisian and Chinese peoples, intensify political consultation with China on issues of mutual interest, and strengthen the economic and trading cooperation between the two countries. So was this something of a coup for the Bush/GOP faction of the State Department? Certainly, I think this is going to tick off the Chinese, the fact that there may have been some U.S. input here. It is not going to help the Obama administration's relationship with China. That, in turn, is not going to help the Obama administration's either foreign policy or economic policy. That will ultimately, if that failure becomes manifest, that will help to put Karl Rove's friends right back in office. Now, more about who is backing WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Again, it's usually conceptualized, WikiLeaks, that is usually conceptualized as some sort of progressive, sort of lefty organization. One of the things that's led to that is the support for WikiLeaks by George Soros and Open Society. Again, Julian Assange, in his January 7th, 2007 email to John Young of Cryptome that we excerpted in For the Record 725, we also did it in 732. We're going to F them all, Chinese mostly, but not entirely, a feint. Invention abounds, lies, twists, and distorts everywhere needed for protection. Hackers monitor Chinese and other intel as they burrow into their targets, and when they pull, so do we. Inexhaustible supply of material. Near 100,000 documents and emails a day. We're going to crack the world open and let it flower into something anew. If fleecing the CIA will assist us, then fleece we will. We have pullbacks from the National Endowment for Democracy, Council on Foreign Relations, Freedom House, and other CIA teats. And more from the WikiLeaks. So when other WikiLeaks founders started to say, this is from John Young, operating a website to post leaked documents isn't very expensive. Young estimates he spends a little over $100 a month for Cryptome server space. So when other WikiLeaks founders started to talk about the need to raise $5 million and complained that an initial round of publicity had affected, quote, our delicate negotiations with the Open Society Institute and other funding bodies, unquote, Young says he resigned from the effort. Open Society Institute is George Soros. Now, George Soros is generally identified with the so-called progressive sector. He was certainly opposed to most of the policies of the Bush administration, or at least many of the foreign policy aspects of the Bush administration. He also was a major investor in Harkin Energy. George Soros is fiercely critical of Israel, and as a result, he, in addition to being allied with the more progressive sector, also has developed some very, very interesting connections over the years with some far right-wing groups as well. Generally, he is a whipping boy of the far right in their attacks on the left. Interestingly enough, after Julian Assange came under attack, he eventually fled to the United Kingdom, and where he began holding out was something called the Frontline Club. And I'm going to have we're running low on time, so I'm going to attenuate much of what is going to follow. But the Frontline Club is where Julian Assange has been holding forth. There's I will have a URL talking about that. The Frontline Club is financed by George Soros. Talking about the founding of the Frontline Club, Mr. Smith set up Frontline by borrowing £3 million, or $5.7 million, against his family's estate in Norfolk, England, and has received financing for its events from the Open Society Institute, a philanthropic organization set up by the billionaire investor and philanthropist George Soros. That is where Julian Assange has been hanging out, it's one of the places he's been obtaining refuge, I should say, is the Frontline Club of George Soros. Interestingly enough, as we've talked about with George in the past discussions of George Soros, he got his start in business, or perhaps in professional life in general, aiding with the Nazi Aryanization and confiscation of Jewish property in Hungary during World War II. Interestingly enough, one of the few people who has talked about that, and he's talking about it in order to smear George Soros, in order to in turn, by extension, smear the so-called progressive sector, is none other than, as I call him, Glenn Dreck, of the incendiary commentator of the Fox Network. And Glenn Dreck is one of the few people who has, correctly, being the classic broken clock that's right twice a day, has correctly hit on George Soros' start in the business world confiscating Jewish property from the Nazis. And again, I have suggested in no uncertain terms that he is a Bormann Jew. Very quickly, in an interview with Steve Croft, and you watched lots of people get shipped off to the death camps. George Soros, right, I was 14 years old, and I would say that that's when my character was made. Steve Croft, my understanding is that when you went out with this protector of yours, you swore that you were his adopted godson. George Soros, yes. Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews. George Soros, yes, that's right, yes. Steve Croft, I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult? George Soros. No, not at all. Not at all. Maybe as a child you don't see the connection, but it created no problem at all. Steve Croft. No feeling of guilt? George Soros. No. I'm Jewish, and here I am watching these people go. I could just as easily be there. I should be there, unquote. None of that? George Soros. Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away, but there was no sense that I shouldn't be there, because that was, well, actually, in a funny way, it's just like in markets. that if I weren't there, of course, I wasn't doing it, somebody else would be taking it away anyhow. And it was the whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator. The property was being taken away, so I had no role in taking away that property, so I had no sense of guilt. Indeed, that's very revealing. I think a lot of the corporate world, I think, could be said to possess that very same type of ethic. Now, we're running low on time, so I'm going to just briefly touch on a number of different elements. In the January 2007, or in a 2007 email to John Young, among the organizations and data that he has, quote, this from an email from Assange himself, dozens of political parties and consulates, World Bank, APEC, UN sections, trade groups, Tibet and Fulon, the FA associations, and Russian fishing mafia who pull data everywhere. There is an organization, Spam House, that monitors internet malfeasance. And there is a web domain that ostensibly appears to be WikiLeaks, but it actually isn't WikiLeaks. It's run by an outfit called Heihachi, which Spam House thinks is a Russian and Baltic online criminal organization. And what they're talking about with the Russian phishing mafia basically are Russian-based cyber criminals who use hacking to basically get information with which to perpetrate online crime. So that appears to be among the elements that is in the mix with WikiLeaks. That is one of the elements in the WikiLeaks soup. Again, more discussion of this in longer discussion of this in the description for the program. I would also note, again, we're running low on time, that Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, the fellow traveler of the Swedish Nazi and anti-Semitic milieu to which Carl Lundstrom belongs, is also part of a conspiratorial milieu or a conspiracy milieu which is sympathetic to the notion that the Aryan race evolved from space aliens and they've been holding out in Antarctica, and that the space aliens and their Aryan brothers from Antarctica and the Third Reich are all going to rise up someday. One of the leaks that is attributed to WikiLeaks is a notion that the U.S. is engaged in a war with flying saucers based near Antarctica. Is that disinformation? Are they preparing us for some sort of UFO appearance? Good question. Another interesting WikiLeaks cable concerns, and again, this will be dealt with at greater length in the description to the program. We can only touch on it here due to the limitations of time. But in one of the past broadcasts dealing with miscellaneous articles and updates, we talked about an Irish Nazi who was basically neutralized down in Bolivia, who appears to have been acting as part of an international Nazi and fascist milieu, operating in conjunction with Hungarian and Romanian fascists in Europe. They were allegedly plotting to overthrow Evo Morales. Now WikiLeaks cables are suggesting that they basically quote U.S. State Department officials as attributing that to an Evo Morales government provocation to serve as a crackdown on his critics. I would note that whatever the truth of the situation, the WikiLeaks documents are exonerating the Nazis for their behavior. I would not put it past Evo Morales to hire individuals to do something like that, although he's effected some decent reforms. He's also pretty cynical, and I sure as hell wouldn't put it past U.S. intelligence and or State Department to use Nazis abroad to try to nail Evo Morales, whom they certainly hate. So go figure there. That concludes, however, that's all we have time for, so this concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 733, WikiLeaks Soup, The Roven Reporter, subtitled A Night in Tunisia. This program is being recorded on January 16th of the year 2011. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.